Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and we had a very great guest joining me tonight. I'm very excited to have her back. She's been on the show before. Let me just give you just a little introduction, and then I'll bring her on. Her name is Tava Dale, and she is the author of a new book called, and I'm hoping I pronounce this right, it's Terroir of Golf, a Golf Book for Wine Lovers. And she is also the owner of Tava Inc. And her journey in golf with no prior exposure led her to discover a profound connection with nature on the course, igniting her passion for the game. Her transition from writing short stories to publishing books showcases her dedication to sharing her love for golf. And she's the first woman that was board member of the Golf Heritage Society. We're going to talk about that tonight as well. And Tava's contributions have not only been published in the Golf Journal, but have also connected her with fellow golf enthusiasts, fostering a shared passion for the sport. So please welcome my very special guest, Tava Dale. Tava, welcome back to Golf Talk Live.
Ted, thank you so much for having me. Do you know, I have been looking forward to this day since February when you invited me. You said, you know what, I only have October 24th. Do you want to be on? And I'm like, yes, yes. That was back in February.
I know. It's funny. Every year, you know, this is my 12th season. I'm going into season 13 next season. And I've got just a few more shows, another month and a half, and then we'll be closing off for the season for the second half of December. And then the month of January, I always take off because I go to the PGA show at the end of January. And that's when I do a lot of my rebookings and that. And each year, you know, I get so many people, some wanting to come back like yourselves and new guests, of course. But I've now probably got four or five agencies that do a lot of my bookings. Just because I've been doing it so long, and they just, hey, you know, they call me up. So when I got down to the PGA show last year, more so than even the previous season, I literally, by the time I left that show, I had pretty much everything up, including most of the fall, booked before I left the PGA show at the end of January. So that's why you didn't get on before October 24th. What's that?
That is so cool.
I was already pretty much booked.
I have to tell you, I'm sitting on my desk, my PGA show credentials from last year, because I get to have media credentials. So yep. Maybe this coming January we'll get to meet up and have a coffee or a glass of wine somewhere in Orlando.
I would love that. Definitely have already got my credentials as well. So I'm looking forward to it. And you know what? It's going to come up faster than what we realize. Time just seems to be zipping by. Let me ask you, we're going to get into talk about the Golf Heritage Society, because I know that's something that you wanted to. You just actually had the they just had the regional the National Convention
National.
Center. The National Summit. But I have to ask you, because I've been sweating over this all day long. Did I pronounce the title of the book correct? Is it Terroir?
You did. I could take lessons from you. So there's even
it must
a page.
Be the French Canadian. It must be the friend. I know that's. I had to go there, and I practiced it all day long. And I said, "Okay, I can't mess this up." And so
awesome.
I studied a little French Canadian.
Well, I am obviously not a native French speaker, and if I was, it would probably sound a little different. But in the book, in the Terroir Golf book, I put a page on pronunciation and what is terroir. A little, you know, explanation about it being the ground, the earth, the soil, the complete climate, but the pronunciation, because one time I had a guy just, you know, pointing at the book title, and he said, mm-hmm. How do you say that? I thought, I got to make it easy for people. So as soon as you open the cover, you get to that page, just a few pages into the book.
Yep. And I'm glad you put it in there, because it helped me quite a bit. We're going to talk about the book in a little bit, but I want to let's start off with the Golf Heritage Society. As I mentioned in the opening remarks, in addition to being a business owner, you're also a board member for the Golf Heritage Society. So they had their convention at Pinehurst. A lot of exciting things. I'm going to get you to talk about some of them. And obviously, Pinehurst recently opened up. They had the new home of the USGA, and I know that played a role as well. We can talk about a little bit about that as well. But give us an idea, because that this took place October 16th, 19th, so it's past. It's past tense, but it's recently. Tell us about, because you hadn't been there, I think, for you said you hadn't been back to Pinehurst for many years, but you were certainly excited about going. Tell us a little bit about when you...
10 years. I was so excited when Golf Heritage Society announced we're going to be at Pinehurst. And I have to remember this in the beginning, because we get to the end and I forget. Anybody who wants to know more about the Golf Heritage Society, the website is golfheritage.org. So I got it in there.
Yeah. We'll get it in many times, I promise. Go ahead.
Well, we follow, all of us at Golf Heritage Society followed what the USGA was doing, because they were coming to our national conventions for the last few years, and they were showing us slides, renderings of the buildings, and what they were envisioning, what they were imagining, because also the World Golf Hall of Fame, which was originally established in Pinehurst in 1974, then it relocated to Florida, St. Augustine, Florida. Now it's back. And so the USGA, it's all under one roof. So it's magnificent. There's a museum on the ground floor, and then upstairs are the lockers. And they are fascinating. They are windows, little windows into every inductee. And it's amazing some of the things that they put into their lockers. Really, really fascinating.
You know, what's interesting is just a sort of a side note. I was at Pinehurst probably, I want to say, 3 seasons ago, maybe 4. And, of course, where the USGA has put its roots, I believe there was, and I'm trying to remember, it was some tennis courts, if I'm not mistaken, was in that area. They had not started construction yet. And somebody in the pro shop said, oh, hey, I don't know if you heard, but the USGA is moving to Pinehurst. So they had not actually broken ground yet. And they told me essentially where it was going to be. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, yeah, I can see that happening. And, of course, now fast forward a few years, and here it is. So I'm excited to get back and see it, because I have not been into the new facility yet, but I hear it's pretty spectacular. And you obviously had a great relationship with the Golf Heritage Society and that sort of partnership there. So tell us a little bit about the event, the convention. How did that go? What were some of the events that took place? And maybe just give us sort of an overview.
Well, it started out with the Golf Heritage Society having a VIP tour and reception. And it was upstairs, so we're surrounded by the lockers, and they created a wonderful meeting space in the middle. Of course, during our VIP tour and reception, we had tables, we had high tops, we had wine, beer, drinks, food, and we were so warmly welcomed by Hillary Cronheim and her colleagues, who are pretty much running the show there. And, you know, Hillary is going back and commuting to Far Hills, New Jersey. That is still their headquarters. It's not like they're moving, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. But they've created this wonderful satellite facility. Mm-hmm. The one building has administrative offices and testing facilities, which is interesting. And then there's the building that we were in over the course of several days. And in between is this beautiful pollinator garden. And so, you know, this time of year, there's not that much in bloom, but it's just lovely the way they've created such a beautiful environment. So, and they themselves are so welcoming. We started out being sort of wined and dined upstairs in the World Golf Hall of Fame, which all of that only just opened barely a month before the U.S. Open was held in Pinehurst in June. So it's amazing what they accomplished.
And you know what's just a fun fact for the listeners out there and that may not know this, the brand new facility, of course, as you mentioned, houses the World Golf Hall of Fame, which was first established in Pinehurst in 1974. They then moved it some years later to St. Augustine, Florida, and now it's come full circle and been relocated back to Pinehurst, which obviously is an ideal place. So it's kind of interesting, a little bit of the history of that, is that they, you know, it sort of began and was established at Pinehurst in the 70s and then, you know, went to Florida for a little while and then now has come full circle back to Pinehurst in this new facility. So as you mentioned, it's, there's actually two buildings, a six-acre campus, which one is the USGA Administration and Test Center, and then the other, of course, is the Museum and Hall of Fame. So tell us a little bit about more. So you had the VIP tour and reception.
We had the VIP treatment, all right.
Yeah, exactly. And as you should, Teba. So tell us a little bit more about that. And then you mentioned about the lockers upstairs, and you said there were some interesting things, and we're talking about some of the old players, old Tom Morris, and that. Tell us some of the interesting things that you saw.
I was actually astonished to see old Tom Morris and young Tom Morris Jr., and Alan Robertson, who of course belong there. If you have young Tom and old Tom, you should have Alan. But I had no idea that, you know, that they were that they were inducted into the Hall of Fame as they should be. And so in the lockers, you know, in old Tom's locker, I was fascinated to see a little feathery ball stamped T. Morris. And I thought, I wonder, could that be real?
No.
And
right.
I grabbed a friend of mine who's a very knowledgeable collector, Wayne Aaron, and I dragged him over there and I said, Wayne, is that ball authentic? And he took one look at it and he said, yep, that's real. So, you know, what
wow.
you see in these lockers when, you know, so you would see hickory clubs, you would see all kinds of things that belonged to, you know, the people who are represented in Hall of Fame. So, you're just a quarter of an inch away, you know, on the other side of the glass from,
right.
you know, touching this history. And actually, when we came in the next day and the next day for our educational sessions, Hillary was there, you know, with her gloves on, and she was putting things in the lockers and taking things out of the lockers, rearranging the lockers. So, I mean, it's really only newly opened, so they're still putting things in. And she said that they will rotate. They have a lot more in storage than they can put into the lockers.
And I understand, too, from some of the notes here, that they have in between the two buildings called the Glade, and that's a garden of some sort. Tell us a little bit about that. It's kind of interesting.
Well, it was really lovely, and it included the pollinator garden. And another surprise, as you walk along the pathways, there was a monumental sculpture of old Tom, a bronze. And, you know, they just unveiled a Tom Morris sculpture in St. Andrews October 3rd during the Dunhill. And that was 110% scale. And I am so thrilled that, you know, people who were there, some other historians, they're sending me photographs, they're sending me, you know, clips from the Golf Channel, all the people who covered it on television, so I got to feel like I was there. But I also got to meet the artist, David Anand, who created that sculpture in St. Andrews. Chick Harper, my book designer of Terroir Golf, took me to his studio, and I got to see the sculpture before it was cast in bronze. And, I'm a golf nut. I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. And I'm also an art dealer and an art collector. So, you know, getting to meet the artist and going to the studio and seeing it before it was cast and all that kind of thing. But I don't really know who created the old Tom statue that's in that garden in the Glade. I need to do some research.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the same person that did. There's a bronze, you know, statue out on the other side of where the clubhouse is. Out, I'm trying to think if it's over near number two.
Payne Stewart.
Payne Stewart. Yeah.
Sure.
So, and then there's another one. My memory's getting bad, but there was several statues out in that area. In fact, I've got pictures of them on my phone when I was there. I had to snap a few, but. So there was that. So I'm just wondering if it's the same individual that created those, maybe had something to do, or maybe the same group or whatnot. But yeah, it'd be interesting to find that out. So obviously there was a new inductee, Padraig Harrington, excuse me. He was also, and he included Ladybug and Ladybird head cover and some other.
Oh, that really tickled me.
right, Ryder Cup replicas that he included. So. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you have such a diversity of the game. And as you said, you know, I think one of the interesting things about golf is you've got something sort of, I won't say two extremes, but you're going from, you know, old and young Tom Morris, and then now you're coming into some of the more recent legends of the game and that are now, you know, as their time is coming, they're getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And it's just the difference and diversity of what you have. And so obviously there were some other players, but you obviously got a good sense of Padraig and what he included in his locker.
Well, and you know, and I've also gotten to see him play in
right.
Ireland, and I also was really taken with Tom Weisskopf. He's a new inductee, mm-hmm. but you know, he's passed away. So he put in his
right.
Ryder Cup 73 golf bag. Well, when I say he put in,
right.
I mean, he was just he's a new inductee, but his Open Championship replica, the Claret jug, famous hat that he wore. So it, you know, I think that. The lockers they're very lovingly composed to give us a sense of who they were, what they accomplished, and a little bit of personality too. You know, like I just really am tickled by Padraig's Ladybug, Ladybird. We call him a ladybug. Now I don't know why,
right.
but in Ireland they call it a ladybird.
Right.
But it's his head cover. For his driver. Anytime you see him on TV, you're going to see that ladybug bird
mm-hmm.
hair cover.
right. Well, and again, it's a sort of a testament to the different and the diversity of players. You know, some are a little bit more, you know, I'm just going to put the ball here and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then some like to really, you know, show their personalities and do something like that. And you know, it's very refreshing to see somebody do something like that and just put, and then you, as you said, you've got somebody like, you know, Tom Weisskopf, who I really, really thought was a phenomenal player. I used to watch a lot of videos that he did on the Golf Channel, a lot of the segments. And he was just loved Jack Nicklaus. I mean, almost every video I ever watched him in, he always referenced Jack Nicklaus. So he had a great deal of respect
wow.
Of him. So I'm glad to see that. It's sad that he obviously passed away, but I'm glad that he was mm-hmm. inducted into the Hall of Fame. He deserved it. He was a great player and just a real gentleman of the game. So in addition to getting the VIP treatment, there was some educational aspects of your visit. Tell us a little bit about that. Give us a sort of the rundown of that. What were some of the things that you guys got to partake in there?
So the Golf Heritage Society, it's all about fellowship and camaraderie, but I would say every single member, hundreds of us, we really respect the history of the game and the tradition of the game, and that's what we love learning about. So our first educational session was on October 17, and a long time Pinehurst resident and historian, Jan Ludwig, who's also a member of the Donald Ross Society, talked about the Tin Whistles Society, which is apparently the oldest men's golf society. And then we had, on Friday, we had a whole, we had three different sessions. So after our general membership meeting, which is always fascinating, but that in itself, and we had our Vice President, George Petro, show us what the new Gulf Heritage Society website is going to look like. Gulfheritage.org. I got it in there twice. It is so spectacular. This man has been spending months and months and months working on this, overseeing the people who are building it. And it's going to be so beautiful and so robust. I mean, I really can't wait for it to be live. But then we had Jerry Ostrey, who was the past president of the Ben Hogan Company, and he's written a book called My Time with Mr. Hogan. And oh my goodness, it's amazing, you know, to listen to somebody who spent so much time with Mr. Hogan, and it's his book is fantastic too. There's so much detail. So My Time with Mr. Hogan. And as I know, it is not easy to write a book. So I really, my hat is off to him for getting it done.
Right.
Then we had Richard Mandel, who's a golf architect. He's a Pinehurst resident. And he is really an authority on Donald Ross and Donald Ross courses. And he's got a book called Life and Times of Donald Ross, and he gave a great presentation. He's the one who gets called in to do a lot of restoration of Donald Ross courses. And there's some people who are like, well, we think we have a Donald Ross course. Is it? And Richard Mandel is the guy who's going to tell you if it is or it isn't.
Right.
I mean, in his lifetime, Donald Ross designed over 400 courses, but he only traveled to about 100 of them. Because, you know, in those days, you know, if you didn't have a car, if you're going by train, or if you didn't have a train, you didn't have a way to get around the country the way we do now.
Right.
You can just pick up and go.
Right.
Most of us get on an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, exactly. And yeah, it's interesting, you know, the Gulf Heritage Society has a lot of different interesting components to it. You had another speaker, Bob Hansen, who is also a longtime member of the Gulf Heritage Society and is the owner of a shop, I think, in the village. What were some of the things that he shared in his time?
Well, I'm lucky that I had a little extra time to go into his shop in the village before he gave his presentation. And it is a museum in itself. And he really only collects the best of the best and sells. I should say collects and sells. But his knowledge, I mean, he started going over to Scotland decades ago and collecting like in the 1960s. So, you know, for instance, he showed us a reproduction of the very, very famous Charles Lee's painting. The original is now in a museum in Scotland. But he was granted the permission to make a few replicas. Now, these are the reproductions, but even the reproductions are very, very valuable. And, you know, he talks about how each and every person inside that Charles Lee's painting, they're little portraits. They're real people. they had to be sketched in advance and then put into the painting. So that painstakingly, and it's just amazing. I want to look something up here. Charles Lee's. All right, what did the original sell for? Oh, it didn't. It's in the museum. But anyway, so he had other works, different mediums, watercolor drawings. And so he was able to talk in great detail about each medium. and who the artist was. And he's a walking encyclopedia.
You know, it's
not
interesting
on,
when you...
Not just on painting, not just on two-dimensional. I mean...
Right.
In his shop, he had a letter signed by old Tom Morris and a very clear signature. And part of the paper was cut out. It was cut out. Now, this wasn't in the session in the USGA, but when a few of us were in his shop, he said, you know, old Tom was very, very frugal. And if there was any piece of paper that he could use, write on, he cut his own letter so he could get that square piece of paper so that he could use it to write on it.
Oh.
You look at that and you go, oh, does that devalue this? No, opposite. That's the thing.
He knows all these details. Right. And just a few other points I want to bring up, and then I want to move on to talk about your book. One of the other things they had was you had your annual banquet was held at the Country Club of North Carolina. And as you put, the food was outstanding. The keynote speaker was Mike Hicks, who was Payne Stewart's caddy and friend. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm sure he shared some really good stories.
I just have goosebumps when you mentioned his name. And I think he said he was with Payne for 12 years. And, people asked him all kinds of questions, including... Oh, what it was like when Payne's plane went down. And the tough questions. And he handled them with such grace. And he was people asked him, what was he like? He said, mm-hmm. They really got to be very good friends over the years.
Right.
Families spent time together. And it was just, it was a real treat to be in the room with him. You could almost feel like you were in the room with Payne.
You know, Payne Stewart was, I remember, in fact, I think it was at Pinehurst. I'm almost 100% sure it was at Pinehurst. I mean, I said my memory's getting a little foggy, but when Phil Mickelson was in contention for the U.S. Open. And Payne Stewart famously grabbed him, on both cheeks. And this was when Phil Mickelson was about to, his wife, not him, but his wife was, and he were expecting their first child. And he said to him, and I'm just paraphrasing, was that the most exciting thing today is not going to be whether you win or lose the golf tournament. But the delivery of your first child, he said that, you're going to become a father. In fact, I think it was going to be that day. So, he knew Payne Stewart just had an ability to just on such a human level. I mean, he was a jokester. I've heard, rumors. I'm sure Mike could probably attest to this, that, he loved to, he had certain fellow players on tour and that he would joke around with and kibitz with. But he was just anybody you talk to, they've all said the same thing. He was just a wonderful husband, a wonderful father, and just a beacon of light. And I think that's one of the reasons, I'm sure, that he was honored at Pinehurst with the statue that I mentioned earlier, is that he just was such a real gentleman. Of course, it has that famous pose where he, after he sunk the putt, and he's got his, leg kicked out the back and his fist pumping out the front. And, how he balanced himself, I'll never know. But he, he was just a great individual. So I'm sure Mike had a lot of stories that were great to share. Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting. Somebody asked him about when Payne cut off the sleeves to his rain jacket. And first he said, well, he cut them off just above the elbow. And then, then he'd cut them more. And I think the sleeves, maybe those pieces of the sleeves that he cut off, I think they're in the museum. But, you know, when he was asked about the putt, you know, because he only beat Mickelson by one stroke.
Right.
He was asked about that and, you know, did you think he was going to make it? And Mike said, no way. He never thought he's going to make that 15-footer. And it was uphill. And when he did, I mean, just everybody went crazy. But he himself didn't think he was going to make it. So, oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
he has great stories.
It's just amazing. So we're going to talk about your book. But I want to point out something first, just before we get into, you know, some of the specifics and that. One of the things, I mean, you had obviously a great time at the Golf Heritage Society, and it's the website again is golfheritage.org. I'm going to slip it in there again.
Good.
What I found, we'll do it again before we finish.
They're going to love me.
golfheritage.org. Don't forget that. Is what I found really interesting, and as I said to you recently, you know, I'm still going through. There's so many things, such beautiful pictures and that in your book. But what I found really interesting, because I had her as a guest, is Jan Bell Jan, who, of course, is a great architect and golf course designer herself. And she was a guest many years ago on the Women of Golf show that I do on Tuesdays. And you obviously expressed that you were very excited, as well as her, as seeing – her original drawing of the Jupiter Island Golf Club, which is featured in this book at the USGA Museum of Science and Golf exhibit. So tell us about the relationship, because she's actually in on page 159. There's a little bit about her. So she's actually in the book. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I interviewed Bill Kaur years ago, literally at my kitchen table in Scottsdale. Tom Doak, David Kidd, Jason Straka, these are guys that I know. Pat Ruddy, who wrote the foreword, and I got to do my interview with Pat in his magnificent library at the European Club. Jan, I felt like, well, I have to have a woman. I have to have a woman architect. And who else are you going to have but Jan Bell Jan? And, she was the president of the American Society of Golf Course Architects. She's only the second woman president. Alice Dye was the first. And the American Society of Golf Course Architects was, you know, Donald Ross was one of the founders. And that's why the members wear the Donald Ross red plaid. The members get to wear that tartan. So, but what's really fun is I got to spend a lot more time with Jan this time than ever before, and she's so much fun to be around, and she's so smart, and she's so practical, and she's so interesting, and every time I'm with her, I learn something new about her. I could talk about her for the rest of the show. I probably shouldn't. But, yeah,
no,
great honor, great privilege to be able to do my interview with her and have her in the book. And those photographs of Jupiter Island Club, she took all those photographs. She hauls around a great big Nikon camera. She had it with her last week in Pinehurst. So, and she takes photographs there. High resolution, they're every bit as beautiful as some of the, you know, 40 meg photographs that we got in for the book from Castiglione del Bosco and a whole bunch of other people.
So tell us about, give us just sort of a general overview, and then we can obviously talk about some specific things. So what was the thought process behind doing this book, Terroir of Golf? Why did you want to do this book? And just let me just tell a couple of quick things first. This is obviously the first edition, first U.S. edition, and obviously it's a collector's for those that want to collect. This is definitely you call it a coffee table book, a whopping 352 pages, very high resolution photography, as you point out, And actually, you indicated that one of the reviewers of the book actually said it's National Geographic quality, which is a very honored thing to say. And obviously, you've had a lot of other great comments as well. But why did you want to do this book? Why was this particular book important to you?
Do you know what's interesting? The title came from Kevin and I. Kevin's my partner, Kevin McGrath. We were playing golf at the Macri, which is a links course on the Isle of Islay. And Islay is much better known for whiskey. And it was right before they were getting ready to do the remodel. And we're out there all by ourselves. We didn't even have a scorecard. They handed us a sheet of paper, and it said, you know, hole number one, 400 yards. And we're like, where's the first tee? We didn't know where we were going. So we were like adventurers, finding our way around the course. And I think it's by the time we got to the ninth hole, which is par three, it was just an aha moment. Terroir of golf. It just came into my head. You know, Herbert Warren Wind coined Amen Corner. Jim Murray coined Hogan's Alley. Taba Dale coined Terroir of Golf. What? It's just a one phrase that came to me. And so I had to own it. And I really didn't know that I was writing a book. But at that moment, I think I realized I had to write about my experience playing the Macri, and then one thing led to another, to another, to another, to another. And it became a travelogue of playing golf in Scotland and staying at some places that we really love, like the Marcliffe near Aberdeen. And, you know, so I was writing about my own experiences. But after I had written 10 stories like that, I realized, wait a minute, that's not a book. I've already done that. Golfer Scotland's Calling. I've already done that. Written about playing golf in Scotland. There has to be something else. And the something else became the Claret Jug story. But it's the definitive story of the Claret Jug. And I've written about the jug before, and I've written about the challenge belt that young Tom won 3 years in a row, and he got to keep it into perpetuity. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of journalists and historians have written all that stuff. But my story is really, really different because it goes deeply into why a jug and what is claret. And this was writing that story, and that the research and writing, that alone took 2.5 years. Because,
wow,
you know, I wanted to know every detail about about the claret jug, you know, and the whole history of claret, which really kind of means red wine. But when the British became very enamored of wine in particular that came from Bordeaux, they couldn't pronounce it right, and I'm not going to either. It's really claret. You have to be French to say that word right, which is how it got to be claret. But in my story, I go all the way back to the Romans in their empire-building days when their soldiers were on their campaigns to the north. They planted the vines in Bordeaux. So I don't think you're going to get that story anywhere else but in my book, Terroir of Golf.
You know, what's really interesting, I mean, there is a lot. I mean, people don't realize what's in this book. And we're going to tell people, obviously, in a few moments how they can get their hot little hands on a copy. You actually had a book signing that I know you're going to talk about as well. But I just found, I mean, there's just so many great courses, and there's a story behind each one. You give a lot of, you know, detail about different things, the history and above and beyond. And what I was going to ask you, though, and then I want you to talk about the book signing and so forth, is, was there a particular order? I mean, like I said, there's 352 pages. Obviously, it's not all the stories and that. There's, you know, the author's page and so forth. But was there, when you were putting this together, like, for instance, you start off with Turnberry. Was there a reason, was there any course was going to start, or was there a method to your madness? In other words, as it flows through the book, was there, you know, did you just sort of add the courses together and just, okay, we're going to put this one first, and or was there a method to it? Like, did you do it based on the travel? How did you put this together with
there,
the courses?
There was a method. When Kevin and I come over from Ireland, we live in Ireland this summer. Well, Kevin's an Irish citizen born in Dublin.
Right.
And when we go to Scotland, we usually take our car and we go on the ferry. And so if we're coming out of Dublin or Belfast or Larne, we would usually take the ferry to Cairn Ryan. When you get off the ferry at Cairn Ryan and you start traveling up the coast, boom, you hit Turnberry. That's how Turnberry got to be the first one, because you're going along and you see the Ailsa Craig, which is magnificent. It's an island in between Scotland and Ireland. And it's famous for one thing only. It's where, and I don't know if they can even do it anymore, or they really regulate it. That's where they harvest the granite that makes curling stones, the Ailsa Craig. And it's just really beautiful. It's just really magical. And a Scottish friend of mine said to me, you know, like 20 years ago, in his very Scottish accent, he said, I can't do it in a Scottish accent, but if you can see the Ailsa Craig, it's going to rain. If you cannot see the Ailsa Craig, it's raining. It does literally disappear when it's raining. But then, you know, we went straight over to another favorite place of ours, which is the Marcliffe, as I mentioned, and I wrote about it in the book. But I also realized, you know, all the times I've gone to King's Barns, which I love, I have never written about it. I have got to write about it. So, but from that, you know, from the east coast of Scotland, we went up to the Highlands, and when we were at Nairn, we were meant to play it right after they held the Scottish Open there, I think, but the weather was miserable. So we thought, well, we have an extra day. We could play it tomorrow. Let's hang out at Nairn. And it happened to be when they were playing Wimbledon, and then Andy Murray won, and we were all obsessed with watching Wimbledon. So that story became part one and part two. There was what happened in the clubhouse when we were all watching Wimbledon. And then there was the course and going out on the course and playing the course. And so I don't know, you know, all the pieces kind of fit together neatly like a jigsaw puzzle. I wrote again about Macrahanish, where I've been a member. It's now 2024. I have been a member for 20 years. So I've written about Macrahanish before, several times, but never, never, never like this time. This story, the title is Mull of Royalty. And so Macrahanish is down at the bottom of the Mull of Kintyre, but below Macrahanish is the course called Dunaverty down in Southend, where Bell Robertson learned to play her golf, and in my book, and it is my book, but in my philosophical book, Belle Robertson is golf royalty, and she's actually one of the first women who, along with Renee Powell and Dame Laura Davies and Annika, was one of the first women who became members of the RNA. But I wanted to write about Belle. So that's how my Macrahanish story is really, really different than any other Macrahanish story that I've written.
Right, and there's a lot of great components to the book, and I want to touch on a few just, you know, for time, but you've got a whole group of winemakers that you talk about in the book. Then, of course, as I mentioned, Jen Valjean and others that were designers that talk turf. And then you've also got a lot of professional golfers from Luke Donald, Ernie Els, David Frost, many others, even Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, and Jan Stevenson, and there's many others in there, that have their own wine labels.
Yes.
And then you sort of you finish it off with golf clubs and resorts with a strong wine culture. So there's obviously an underlying theme in this book is some great golf and some fantastic wine, and some of the great experiences, obviously, that you and Kevin had while you were in the area and preparing for this book. So I can see why it would take 2 years of research to get all of this information together. But just touch on a little bit from each.
That was only for the one story, the Claire Chuck story. It was eight and a half years.
Okay.
Eight and a half years.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, that makes more.
Writing.
I was going to say that makes much more sense then. So just touch on a little bit of each. Again, maybe, you know, again, you maybe if you want to feature one of the winemakers that you spoke to and just touch on, was there one specific that really stood out?
Well, actually, yes. All of them, but I would love to jump to, I don't know how much time we have. I'd love to jump to the last chapter, Golf Clubs and Resorts with a Strong Wine Culture.
Okay.
And it starts in Napa. And when I learned about Mayakama having more wine lockers than they had golf lockers, I thought, oh my gosh, this needs to be in my book. And then, I went literally around the world. And I do think that people who buy this book, if I don't give away all the secrets, there are going to be some really surprising discoveries. And then, I mean, it's a visual feast of contemporary color photography. There's also a lot of fascinating historical images. But I think it's really a treasure trove of entertaining stories. And so why each of those clubs or resorts is in the book, one surprise is Adare Manor. Why? You kind of got to read the book. But it goes all the way around the world to South Korea, Whistling Rock, 167,000 square foot clubhouse, 30,000 bottle wine cellar, 10,000 bottle tasting room, and a wine sommelier, a tea sommelier, and a water sommelier.
Wow.
Ooh. Wow. That was right.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, that would take the 8 years just to get through part of that. I guess what's really interesting, and I want to get, and again, I apologize because we've got limited time, unfortunately, but I want to make sure that we get this information. So currently, right now, the book is available through the website Claire House Publishing, and it's clarehousepublishing.com, and it's Clare housepublishing.com. And it's very easy to order online. Cost, including 3-day FedEx shipping, is $95. So I want to make sure we got that out there, and we'll give that again one more time. Currently not available anywhere else except there. So you want to make sure you go to clarehousepublishing.com and place your order there, and you are happy to ship it out to them because it is a beautiful book, and you want to make sure that some tender, loving hands pack this up and send it out, because it is a beautiful, beautiful book. But you did a book signing. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that as well. Where did that take place, and how did it go?
Oh, that was so much fun. So the Golf Heritage Society always has a trade show. Now, this society is formed 53 years ago, and it was originally the Golf Collectors Society. So the early members and the contemporary members, they love to collect. They love to buy, they love to trade, they love to sell their stuff. And it's really a fun day, the trade show. And this year in Pinehurst, it was in a venue called the Fair Barn, F-A-I-R, Fair Barn. And it was really a cool, big, kind of rustic building. It had a lot of charm. It had a lot of character. And having the Gulf Heritage Society, you know, be the vendors, it was absolutely perfect. So this is the first time they've done this. They invited some member authors to have tables where they could do book signings. And it was great fun. Guys like Richard Mandel were there. Anne Liguori was there with her new book. Mm-hmm. I got to have my table right next to hers. So that was just so much fun. Mr. Austrey was there. Jerry Austrey was there. And with his book, you know, My Time with Mr. Hogan. So there was a lot of different, you know, subject matters. My book not fitting into my book size-wise and subject matter-wise. You know, I was just, I was in a world of my own. I don't know how else to say it. But it was really, really fun for people to come marching up to my table and say, I want to buy your book. And, you know, then I would get to sign it for them and inscribe it to them. And, you know, several people were buying books to give as gifts, so they wanted them inscribed to this person, to that person, and different, you know, different messages. And I'm so particular. There was one guy who wanted four, and he kept coming back to the table, and I'm like, oh, John, I'm sorry. I've only done one so far. People were coming, oh, John, I've only done two so far. And he had driven down from Pennsylvania, so he wanted to take them all back with him. Well, by the end of the day, he finally got all four of his books all signed and wrapped. I'm extremely particular about how my books are handled. They have to be, sure, you know, really handled with care because they're big and they're heavy. So
yes.
I wrap them. I have a very particular way of wrapping them. And even when I was overseas this summer, and my first books were shipped into the U.S., I had trained somebody to wrap them just so. And one guy even wrote to me who got a book, and he said, the book was fabulous, but the packaging was, I've never seen anything like this before. It was the best packaging I've ever seen. So that was also very gratifying.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're putting something together like this that is meant to be really not just to read and enjoy what's between the covers, but it's meant to really be a piece that you can have on your coffee table or some other area that it's almost like a display. I mean, you want to have care. You don't want it beaten all up and, you know, somebody receiving that in the mail and or courier, what have you, and it's all, you know, bent and twisted and you know, half it's missing because they've been shipping it around. So, you know, you have to, trust me,
oh,
I know.
That sounds like such a horror story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had plenty of my own on the receiving end, so I know. But, yes, I remember when you shipped me one, how beautifully wrapped it was and that. So thank you for that.
You're
but
so
yeah,
kind.
There's so much in the book. And, I mean, we could go through a lot of things, but the truth of the matter is we want people to buy this. This is something that they're going to experience. There's so many great things. There's so many great people that, you know, you featured in the book. There's great places, great courses, you know, talk about the wines. And it truly is a golf book for wine lovers as well. It's not just about golf, but it's about, you know, wine as well. And those are your two passions. So, again, if you're listening to the show and you want to get one of these or more for yourself, go to clairehousepublishing.com. Very simple to order. That's where it's available right now. And it is includes in the price for the $95 includes the FedEx 3-day shipping, air shipping, I might add. So you get it pretty quick, and it's going to be safe and secure and snug as a bug in a rug, as they say. And Teva is happy to ensure that it arrives safe, but makes a great gift not only to yourself, but if you're with the holidays coming up, now's the time to get it. Let's think of that, you know, family member that might really appreciate this, and let's, you know, get out there and get it as a gift. And I don't want to forget my friends at the Gulp Heritage Society. You can also visit after the show their website, gulpheritage.org, so make sure you check that as well.
You're fantastic.
But
can I add one more thing? One thing we discovered in talking to people about Terroir of Golf is there are a lot of people interested in giving it as a corporate gift. And so I also have the ability to create custom dust jackets. So that a corporation could have their own branding. So, you know, we have and clubs that have a member guest for men and a member guest for women, you know, they could also have, you know, it could be personalized for their club and their event. So that's something to just keep in mind.
So it's not just a coffee table book. It's so much more, as Teva has just explained. So whether you're the head of a corporation and you want to have it customized, she can do that for you, or at a club, you want to have it custom for the club as well. But either way, if you go to clairehousepublishing.com, it's available there. You can order it right online, and it'll be shipped within just a few days through FedEx. Teva, thank you very, very much for coming on and talking about this. I know, like I said, there's so much in this book. I mean, we would be here for days trying to get through everything. And I want people to buy it and enjoy it as I've been enjoying it. And I still have much more. As I said, it's 352 pages, so there's a lot to read. But a lot of beautiful images. It's just a great book, very well put together. And I think it's going to do extremely well. You actually sold out at the book signing. So obviously, it wasn't just the gentleman from up north that bought four copies. Others were buying it as well. So I'm sure he's going to give those some of those as gifts as well. But thank you very, very much for coming on tonight, and always look forward to our chat. And I really appreciate you sending me a copy of the book. I'm enjoying it so far, and I know I will enjoy as I read through to the end. But thank you for sharing that. And also thanks for sharing about the Gulf Heritage's annual national convention that took place just a couple of weeks ago, and some of the guest speakers as well. I know they appreciate that. And of course, at Pinehurst and the home of the USGA's satellites and the Golf Hall of Fame as well. The World Golf Hall of Fame is now located there. But thank you for joining
me
tonight.
It's back home. It's where it belongs. I am so humbled.
That's right.
I'm so honored to be on your show and to have all this time with you, all this luxurious, luxurious time. My heartfelt appreciation for taking an interest in me as a writer, and also the Gulf Heritage Society. You know, we want to grow the society, and so we would love to have some more people discover us. And I'm just so grateful to have been introduced to you and be on your show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You're welcome back anytime. I imagine you'll be writing more books, and when that time comes, I'll be happy to come and help share that one as well. But for this one, again, for those of you that want to get more information on the Gulf Heritage Society, go to gulpheritage.org. And for those of you that want to learn more and certainly purchase one of a copy of her book or more, Terroir of Golf, a golf book for wine lovers, go to clairehousepublishing.com. And you can order it right there. Thank you very much again, Teva. All the best, and I'll see you at the PGA show.
I hope so. Let's make a plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely do. You have a great evening,
thanks,
and thank you for joining me on Golf Talk Live. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we ran a little bit over time, but not to worry. All of that will be available on the recorded version. I want to thank all of my special guests tonight, guys from the Coach's Corner, John Hughes and Clint Wright, and then also my very special guest, the author of Terroir of Golf, Teva Dale. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend, and I will see you next week right here on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel, and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.